Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And away we go.
It's the Wretched Radio Mail Call Delivery Bag Q&A Infotainment Nationwide Extravaganza, featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Really. Now here's your host, Todd, freakishly tall Friel.
The mail is here! Ooh. This is Wretched Radio. If you have a question, comment, conundrum, or snark, please send it to idea@wretched.org. Would love it if you'd include your name. Understand if it's sensitive and you want to be anonymous. That's fine, but would love to know your name. You see, we're like Cheers. Send it to idea@wretched.org. Let's start with a really encouraging email, because we are your Christian station of hope and encouragement.
Since when?
We are?
I'm sorry. I don't know where I read that. Synapse. Rich writes, I had an appointment at the dentist. Congratulations. It's that time of year. Make sure you floss. But watch out for what kind of floss you use, because apparently... Did you hear this, by the way? This isn't going to be helpful or all that conclusive for you if you know somebody who is struggling with Alzheimer's. But I'm at least hopeful that they're trying to figure out where this wretched thing comes from. Some people are starting to say, I was reading an article over Christmas, that Alzheimer's is coming from, it starts with like gum disease and bacteria in the gums that then makes its way into the brain, which then can be deteriorating certain regions of the brain. Now, look, I don't know if that's true or not, but wow, do I wish they would find some sort of a solution to that problem. I see that they're making some progress, that for some types of dementia issues, that it can even, the brain can regrow and rebuild itself. It's not for all types, and it's pretty early. But I've been trying to think lately of, is there any worse way for somebody's life to end than that? To lose a loved one in a lingering way where they disappear from you in front of you. If that is your situation, let's keep praying for a medical cure for that. But might I just encourage you with this? Your loved one is not their brain. If they have dementia or Alzheimer's and they are acting erratically, if you will, out of character, that's not them. So many people are hurt by this because they see a sin coming out of a parent or a loved one that's maybe even violent or ugly or nasty, and it's like, where's my dad? Where's my mom? This isn't like that. You're right, it's not. Because the brain is merely the physical mechanism that connects the spiritual with the physical, and we are not our brains. Yes, it is a part of our body, but it forms a function like a kidney, and if it is deteriorating and the person is therefore acting aggressively, violently, nastily, out of character, it's because their brain is breaking. That's not them being manifested. So don't let that cause you to feel like, is that really what my dad or mom is like? No, it's not. Especially if they're a Christian and they've been sanctified over the years. Now, that doesn't mean that we all don't have propensities inside of us that can act like that. But please don't be heavy-hearted because they are acting so out of character, because we are not our brains. Back to Rich. I had an appointment at the dentist. After this joyful experience, I decided to stop at a small restaurant for the afternoon baked chicken special. Oh, you gotta love a baked chicken special, man. Especially if you catch it early. You catch it late, and it's been baking in that rotisserie thing, it can be it can be like floss, frankly. And chicken, you don't want to be using chicken floss. Chicken floss, not as effective as you might think that it is. The place was between lunch and dinner crowds, so basically empty. Since I don't eat too many carbs, I asked that the garlic bread be returned to the kitchen. Now, I know what you're thinking. Friel, where exactly is this story going? It's going to Jessie, the waitress. She asked if she could have my garlic bread for her break. Of course, was Rich's reply. Younger woman, about to enter middle age, with many arm and neck tattoos. Later, Jessie took my payment and returned with the change. I had a What Time Is Purple ready for her, which contained her tip. What's this? She asked. My gift for you. Is this about Jesus? I believe in him, but I've moved so far away. I used to go to church, the waitress said. Her eyes were now beginning to water. Last night, I was praying that God would help me to return closer to him. Rich said, Jessie, I believe the king has begun to answer your prayer. At this point, the tears were flowing. She was barely able to say, thank you so much, as she moved quickly out of sight towards the solitude of the back room. I lingered a few more minutes, should she want to talk. It became obvious my assignment for the king was concluded, so I left. That should encourage you. Don't evangelize based on feelings or fears or senses or how you perceive somebody might respond. Just in some way, shape, or form, share your faith. You don't know what God is doing. Well, I'm actually anxious to get back out to the campuses. Once it warms up a little bit and the kids are willing to sit outside for a while, I can't wait to get back to the campuses. The last time that we were out, we went from one student to the next where it was a joyous encounter. Does it always happen that way? No, it does not. But you can go dragging your feet. You'll come home clicking your heels because there is joy in being obedient and sharing your faith. And you do not know how God is working in the heart and the life of somebody that you are about to meet. And it might be as simple as, here is a gospel booklet for you that I received at wretched.org/purple. They didn't even charge me for it. They gave it to me. So here, take this and read this. That's it. And you never know when you are going to meet a Jesse. Rich, well done, sir. Well done. If you don't have copies of What Time Is Purple, we'll give them to you. wretched.org/purple. We're going to get to a million. No, you're going to get to a million. You're going to get to a million. We'll give them to you. You give them away. Get them in your car. Put them in the glove box. Have them in a box. Bring them with you. Leave them in the restaurant. Give them away to somebody you sit next to. Just be involved with the Great Commission. wretched.org/purple. I'll leave this one anonymous. Just cause. This past summer, I came out of the Word of Faith movement and have been reading and applying God's truth to my life in every way I can. Isn't that sweet to hear? That should encourage you, Christian. God's still saving people. Remember how you couldn't wait to get home from work to dive into the Bible? Do you remember that? You could not wait. I've got to read. I can't wait to get in my car. I've got to listen to that sermon. I got to finish up that sermon. You couldn't wait. God's still doing that. My problem is I see the people around me and I'm getting annoyed and mad. No, they're getting annoyed and mad when I try to correct their false doctrine. Oh boy, here we go. Another familiar tale, is it not? You get saved, or suddenly you're saved, but you get introduced to great theology and teaching, and now your eyes are just blown open, and you got to start telling people and correcting people who have lesser theology, and let the games begin. This is typically called cage stage, where you and I should be locked up in a cage so we don't wreck every relationship. Please keep that in mind. This is not to tamp down your enthusiasm for evangelism or sharing the truth. It is an encouragement to be wise. Received another email from a fellow who recently got saved. Had been in bondage to pornography. Got saved. Praise God for that. And now the missus is starting to feel it a little bit because he's spending more time with his Bible, pointing out bad things on TV, and she, like so many people, are starting to not really be all that happy about the fact that if you will, now just hear this out, when you get saved and your spouse isn't, they think you're having an affair. Now, of course, not a romantic affair, but your affections are going to another. That's hurtful. And we need to be mindful of that when we get saved. And even if we've been saved a long time, we need to be wise about how we share the faith. I am not trying to minimize or to say dial it back with your enthusiasm for it or doing it. I'm saying be wise about it, because if you wreck a relationship, you've undermined your testimony and you don't have access to the person anymore and you might get divorced. It does happen. And it might happen anyway, but nevertheless. I was thinking about this. Mrs. Friel and I, we were driving to Greenville. I don't know why on 85 on the way from Atlanta to Greenville, that if there's an accident, it is a parking lot both directions. It is a Gawker special, and it just shuts down for miles and tens of miles on each side. So we avoided it. I saw a sign that said accident in 17 miles, and so Mrs. Friel went to the Googler machine and went, oh, we better get off here. It's redirecting us. And she said, praise Jesus that he saved us from that. We would have been in that for hours. And we have some friends who have been stuck in it for like 10 hours. Can you imagine? And I thought to myself, if I were a pagan and my Christian spouse said, praise Jesus that he alerted us to the traffic so that we could avoid a lingering experience on 85, how would I have felt if I were not saved? Praise Jesus. How's about thanking me? I'm the one who saw the sign. All that to say, with your new enthusiasm, praise God for it. Just be wise in how you share it. This is Wretched Radio. No doubt, if you've spent even a minute listening to conservative media, you have been whipped into a frenzy. The problems with our society, the collapse of a culture, the statistics, the legislation. We got to do something about this, but then we're never told what to do. I believe the greatest social ill of our time is the war against the unborn. Millions of children being killed in our country during our lifetime. And we can do something about it, and we can practically get engaged in the war for life. Preborn.org/wretched, $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. It saves the life of a child. Let's not just be righteously indignant. Let us do something to save lives. The women hear the gospel, they receive support, and they choose life. $28 for an ultrasound. Preborn.org/wretched.
We are proud to announce our newest addition to the Drive-By series, Drive-By False Teaching. And just as the name implies, Drive-By False Teaching will give you the tools you need to distinguish the true from the almost true and contend earnestly for the faith.
Too many Christians lack the boldness to confront error for what it is. Even the most serious errors, this is true of. If an error becomes popular enough, it can claim a certain immunity from criticism. We often think that it's better to be agreeable than it is to be aggressive for the truth. If the early church had been as tolerant as we are of error, Christianity would have died out long before it ever got a foothold. And in fact, that very thing almost occurred in the 3rd century and the early 4th century.
The gospel of Jesus Christ is glorious and well worth defending. Drive-By False Teaching will help you defend our doctrines. Get your copy today at wretched.org/false-teaching.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they had to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? Pick up our phones. Call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Know your church fathers. Polycarp was a disciple of the Apostle John and the Bishop of Smyrna. He was a staunch defender of orthodoxy, combating the Gnostic heresies. Before his death as a martyr, Polycarp proclaimed, 86 years I have served Christ, and he has done me no evil. How could I curse my King who saved me? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Emil Zwane is not dead. Please note, Emil Zwane is not dead.
Thank you. I've been clearing that up all week.
It's Wretched Radio. What did I say? Whatever it was, it must have been clumsy and unclear because I was getting emails too. I received one when I had mentioned a friend of Emil Zwane died at an early age, unexpected, 54 years old, just died. Nobody knew. There was not some prognosis. A reminder, life is fleeting. And I thought, in fact, Joey, your notes said Emil Zwane's friend died.
Yes, because I barely caught it, but I knew it was a little bit
unclear. I didn't
unclear.
For a minute. I waited
well,
till the very end.
My apologies for not making that eminent, especially to Emil Zwane. Dude, didn't mean to kill you. I'm glad you're alive.
And Mrs. So Emil people, Zwane, she's like, wait a minute.
You know, there were a lot of people asked about that, and so many people, no, everybody that asked about it, it was one of those times, I don't know why, but I was like, it's just so good to be a Christian. And Christians writing in that weren't like, hey, you moron, he's not dead. It was none of that. It was this heart, please tell me Emil isn't dead. That would be horrible. He's such a dear man. It was all concern. And then it was even concern to the level of, this is the first I've heard of his death, but maybe Living Waters is keeping it quiet because, you know, sensitivity to the family. Everybody was so thoughtful and so kind. And I went, I just love being a Christian. And I love it that Emil Zwane is not dead. I repeat, Emil Zwane is not
pretty
dead.
Sure Easy does, too.
No one was more saddened by news of his death than him.
Emil himself, Easy from Living Waters. He's I don't know what his he's the executive director or something there. He's an Arab, who's Ray Comfort's son-in-law, who happens to be Jewish. Okay, Emil's the Arab, Ray's the Jew, and yet two of the dearest people on the planet who get along so sweetly. There's your Middle East conundrum solved right there. You get everybody saved, Jew, Muslim, everybody gets saved. It'll quiet down over there. I don't expect that to happen, by the way. And that's biblical. Hold on. If you're looking for an explanation for what's going on, even now in Baghdad and Iran and why there is no peace in the Middle East, I would like to remind you that it is biblical. Let me take you to Genesis and chapter 16. Abraham, old Abraham, he was just a little bit older than Paul Washer when he and his wife got pregnant this last time. Abraham has made a promise that he's going to have a son. Sarah laughs. She's old too. Shouldn't be having babies, either one of them at this age. What do? They take matters into their own hands, specifically Sarah pushing Abraham. It doesn't look like God's going to come through with his promise. So be intimate with my handmaid, my bondservant, Hagar, and have a baby. That was a Middle East custom that was not uncommon, so it wouldn't have been, no, it was wrong. But that was customary. Abraham sinned, did it. She gets pregnant. And now Sarah is kind of angry and sour toward the woman who is pregnant, carrying her husband's son that isn't her baby. That's the setup for Genesis 16. Hagar's being mistreated. And so she says, I'm running away from my mistress. An angel of the Lord said to Hagar, return to your mistress and submit to her authority. I will give, now she's, the angel is speaking to Hagar, not to Sarah, because you remember Abraham has been promised that he is going to be the father of what? Many nations, many descendants. This is the angel now speaking to Hagar. You are now pregnant. You'll give birth to a son, and I will give you more descendants than you can count. You are to name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard about your misery. Okay, so we see we've got two half-brothers here. They're both going to be in the ancestry of many people, great nations, and I would even go so far as to say two world religions. The text continues about Ishmael. This son of yours will be a wild one, free and untamed as a wild donkey. He will be against everyone, and everyone will be against him. He will live at odds with the rest of his brothers. Who are the descendants of Ishmael? The Muslims claim ancestry to Ishmael. They believe that he was the promised son for Abraham. They are the descendants of Ishmael in the Middle East. Who are the descendants of Isaac? Jewish people, and then by extension, Christians. Genesis 16, Ishmael's descendants, whether you think it's the religion of peace or just those Middle Eastern nations, will always be at war with his brothers as the descendants of a wild donkey. Will there be peace in the Middle East? Not until the Prince of Peace returns. Not if Genesis 16 is true, and it certainly has demonstrated that it is. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org. And by the way, speaking of the Middle East, if I could, the persecution for Christians over there, it is not lightening up. It is nasty. I don't know if you saw the year-end video that we sent out about Bible League International. Middle East, Asia, India, Africa, Christians are getting shellacked. The scars that they carry, the imprisonment. Hold on, here's one in the far the not latter rain, the middle the top rain, the rain, early rain, I think is the name of the church. It's Presbyterian. Yep. There was a pastor there who has been preaching faithfully about the separation of church and state, basically preaching to his people, if we get persecuted, we submit. We submit to that. We are not rabble-rousers. We are not revolutionaries. We submit to the government. Nevertheless, the government, the godless government of China, saw him as such a threat. Why? Because he's proclaiming the gospel faithfully. The church is growing. Got arrested. Subversion of the government, they said. He was just sentenced to a mere 9 years in a work camp. Highly unlikely he will survive if he has to endure that sentence. Why? Because he's faithfully proclaiming the word. And I will do a shout out for Bible League. Christians in China don't have Bibles. Christians in the Middle East, they do not have Bibles. Please answer their prayers. Send a Bible to our brothers and sisters in the Middle East, China, persecuted regions around the globe. It's $5 per Bible. However many you can send every month, the better, because our Christian brothers and sisters, every single time when they're being persecuted and they're asked, how can we pray for you? They'll say, pray for faithfulness. They don't say, pray for protection. Don't pray that, you know, our feet won't be beat. Pray that we'll be faithful. And if we could get a Bible, that'd be really great. $5, wretched.org/Bible, wretched.org/Bible. It is with Bible League International, a faithful ministry for decades. An email sent to idea@wretched.org from Richard. My church recently gave a report from the members who participated in Operation Christmas Child, in which they stated that while they were at the packing center, they, quote, prayed over the gift boxes. I'm confused by that. Praying over an inanimate object. Your thoughts? That fair question. We see that, don't we? We see prayers happening these days in evangelical Christianity, different locations, different postures, different activities. For instance, prayer walks. There's a part of town that we are really concerned about, so we're going to walk around that town and we're going to pray while we go. Is there anything wrong with that? My answer is not necessarily. Is there anything wrong with praying over boxes that God would bless them, the message that is inside, that somebody would get saved? We're praying over a pallet of Bible League. We're praying about these Bibles. that God would send his word and that it would cut, that it would convict sinners, that it would encourage the saints. And is it wrong to be standing over the pallets and doing that? No, it's not wrong at all. As long as we understand that our proximity to the object that we're praying for has no more efficacy than if we are 10 miles away from it. That it isn't some sort of that the prayers become more powerful because we're walking around a town praying for the salvation of people. As long as we understand that it doesn't add any strength to our prayers, that's fine, especially if it helps you concentrate, if it helps you to focus, that's good. It doesn't have any more power. So if somebody thinks so, that, okay, now this is, we've got to be near these boxes, Bibles, or zip code for the prayer to work. Well, that's wrong. And I would just say, change your thinking on that, and then pray any way that you want to. And please note, if you pray away from the boxes, Bibles, or town, it's just as strong. What makes our prayers efficacious? It's not our location. It's Jesus Christ. Now, having said that, there is something that the Bible indicates can demonstrate to God the sincerity and the urgency of your request. And that's a little old something called fasting. I don't believe that it's mandated, but it is described regularly as if it should be something of a regular feature for the Christian. Not mandated. You're not sinning if you don't. What does fasting accomplish? Does it make our prayers stronger? No. It simply says to God, I'm knocking harder. I'm petitioning even harder here, Lord. I'm really, really urgent about this. But the only way that their prayer is received, it does not depend on how many calories you consume or not. It is based on Jesus. He is our high priest. He is the one that makes our prayers efficacious. God listens to them, not because we fast. He listens to them because of Christ. So keep praying, no matter where you are. This is Wretched Radio.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. Legislators in at least five states introducing bills in recent weeks that would require athletes in high school and lower grades to compete on teams that correspond with the gender on their birth certificate. Imagine that. The bills in Georgia, Tennessee, Missouri, New Hampshire, and Washington are intended to prevent what has happened in Connecticut, where two biological males who identify as female have won multiple girls' state championship track titles. Georgia State Representative Philip Singleton, a Republican, said his bill would prevent biological males from having an unfair advantage if they choose to compete as females. His bill would not impact team sports like football or basketball. You'll remember last year, a legal group representing three female Connecticut high school athletes filed a Title IX complaint with the U.S. Department of Education, the assertion being the state's governing body is violating federal law by allowing boys to compete in girls-only events. It is a similar argument made by three current or former female athletes, Dorian Coleman, Martina Navratilova, and Sanya Richards-Ross, in a Washington Post column last year. They wrote the difference in on-field and on-track results isn't the result of boys and men having a male gender identity, more resources, better training, or superior discipline. It's because they have androgenized bodies. Would that be simply they have male bodies? We'll see how it goes. Good news in Virginia. A couple embroiled in a legal battle with their apartment complex over the holding of Bible studies has reached a settlement, finally. Only took 8 months. Last summer, Fredericksburg residents Ken and Liv Haug revealed that they had been threatened with eviction after holding Bible studies in their private apartment. As a result, faith-based law firm First Liberty got involved, filed the lawsuit arguing the ban was a violation of the Fair Housing Act. It discriminated against the couple's freedom of religion. Now, 8 months on, an agreement has been reached. A win for the Haugs, thank you. The new settlement involves the Haugs signing a new lease at the complex, which stipulates that they are permitted to host Bible studies in the community room or in their private apartment. Thank you. Wow, who'd ever thought we'd have to actually write that into your lease? Amazing. The couple is delighted by the positive outcome. The apartment complex hasn't commented on the settlement. Yeah, what do you say?
And a little bit of good news on the pro-life front. Freshman U.S. Representative Jeff Van Drew, a Republican from New Jersey, became the latest lawmaker to sign on to legislation protecting babies who survive attempted abortions. You remember until last month, Van Drew was a member of the Democratic Party. He flip-flopped, and now he's signed on to the pro-life legislation. Although the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has refused to allow a vote on the bill some 80 times, House Republicans are seeking to circumvent that by garnering enough support for a discharge petition, which Van Drew signed this week. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Tony Vercanis.
Books of the Bible. 2 Timothy is Paul's last letter before his execution. He encourages Timothy to persevere amid suffering. Paul had suffered for the sake of the gospel, but he also knew the beauty and power of the gospel. He charges Timothy to cling to and preach the gospel. When you face opposition, do not fear or be ashamed, but trust God and rely on his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Focus, Friel, focus. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org. I can't. Not only can you send an email to us at wretched.org, idea@wretched.org, you can beep talk 1-877-282-BEEP. I'm looking at those sound files and wasn't quite ready to get to this, but now I can't help myself because the title of it is, this is the phone call description that Joey has put into my computer. I
Most
haven't heard it yet.
Lies.
Complementarians and mothers. Now, come on. Tell me you aren't intrigued just a little bit. Complementarians and mothers. In other the complementarian position, God makes boys a certain way in general. God makes women a certain way in general. And we complement one another because we're not identical. We, you know, complement one another. And we have roles to play that complement one another for the betterment of all of us, that we are better working together, not usurping roles, but complementing one another in our roles. And this is another reminder of the brilliance of God. If you've ever been in a meeting at an office and nobody's in charge, how does that meeting go? How does something get resolved? Well, you can try the old consensus routine, and that works on occasion, but let's be honest. People start vying for their way. Imagine in your home, mom and dad aren't in charge. Every morning, we wake up and figure out what we're going to do today. And the four-year-old says, Nickresh, Nickresh. So everybody goes, okay. Licorice, we'll do licorice today. But then the 8-year-old decides, Pac-Man, I want to do Pac-Man. That is the most, that's the most contemporary reference to some sort of game I can think of. Okay, so now what do we do? So now the 4-year-old and the 8-year-old are going to be fighting over Pac-Man and licorice. Mom decides, no, we've got things to do around here. I need people cleaning up their rooms. And then we're going to be doing our homeschooling routine. And dad thinks, you know, I've got to go to work and make some money here. Otherwise, this whole thing falls apart. But no, we don't get to do that until we have complete unanimity. We're not unanimity, but complete unanimous thinking. We're all on board with licorice today. Doesn't work. Let's be honest. We'd be fighting constantly if it were not determined for us. Mom and dad are in charge. The boss is the one where the buck stops. There are people in authority in the government. You submit to them. Student, you have to turn in the paper that the teacher says and not vice versa. The roles have to be determined by somebody in authority or you have chaos. And the same thing is true in the marriage relationship, the parenting relationship, the church relationship. If there is not somebody ultimately in charge, who determines? This is the role that you will play. You're going to have Lord of the Flies. And so it is complementarianism, not soft complementarianism, which isn't complementary at all. Complementarianism, men, do this. Women, do that. It's been determined for us. And it runs better when we do. We will all be happier. It's true. We will all be happier, men and women alike, when we do it the way that the one in authority has told us to do it. So, Joey, do we want to get to this in advance? Did I overhype this thing, or is this worth listening to right now?
Let's go ahead.
Here we go.
Hi, Todd. I'm a complementarian and believe in the roles of men and women. At what age is a child too old for a mother to exercise teaching authority over them?
Great question.
And does their parental authority overwrite the rule that a woman should not be teaching over a man?
That's just outstanding. I think that we've got to define here the realms of authority that we're describing. There's the church realm of authority, and there's the home realm of authority. Now, there's going to be a little overlapping here. I get that. But let's start out with biblical categories. You've got the church authority. You've got pastor, that God clearly says it needs to be a man with the following qualifications. And then women and children and the other men submit to that authority. And a woman can't qualify for that role because she's not a man. So now the thinking would be, now we're taking that same idea and we're bringing it into the house. Should we do that? I don't think so. I think the submission of a child to both mom and dad in the home is simply a different realm of authority. And that we see not only in Exodus 20, but we also see in the first Bible verse that you had your children memorize, and that is Ephesians 6:1, children, submit unto your parents. Obey your parents as in the Lord, for this is the commandment with a promise. So they have to submit while they're in the home, while they're under the authority of mom or dad. And if mom is still teaching a child who's 12 years old, 14 years old, biblical truths, I don't think that that is usurping the role of an elder. That's simply being obedient to the command to bring up our child in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. So I think that a mom can always be teaching a son through the child rearing experience while the child is under the parent's authority. Once the child leaves the home, can the mom still teach the son? And I think the answer is yes, because we're not talking about usurping the role of pastor. We're talking about just a relationship, which is why, too, sometimes, like some of these issues, I understand they get a little bit complex. You're at dinner. Everybody at the table happens to be 40 years old. There's two couples, a man and a woman, and a man and a woman, 40 years old. The woman in the conversation has something to apply biblically to the conversation, or she just read something, heard something, discovered something in the Bible, and she wants to share it. Can she? Is she usurping the role of pastor? And the answer to that is no. You're having a conversation. You're doing fellowship with one another, which is what fellowship is, male or female. You're talking about Jesus Christ, and you can even teach in that context and share. Now, in the church setting, that is where we enter into a different realm of authority. Now, I think far more so, we need to be taking a look at the clear command, elder role is reserved for males. Because if we don't have those written rules for us, you got yourself complete chaos. 1-877-282-BEEP is the number of the old toll-free.
1-877-282-BEEP. 1-877-282-BEEP.
Please keep in mind, Joey has to screen through these calls, so if you can keep it brief, trust me. When Joey has more nap time, we're all happier.
If somebody is a shut-in, like people in rest homes that want to share their faith over the phone or on the internet, tell me a good way to do that.
Are you talking about you, sir? I don't know if you are or if you're thinking about the future and preparing for it. Wait, that's why you were encouraging. That's just so cool to hear. Yeah, okay, let me start with inside of the nursing home or the assisted care facility, whatever the correct term is these days. I say we've got a pretty attentive audience, captive audience right in front of us. Unless maybe they can wheel or walk faster than you can. You've got somebody you can share your faith with. I'm actually this I think we talked about this maybe a month or so ago. It's not that I'm looking forward to those years where it's more difficult and to just be mobile and where I will require more care. I don't think any of us are excited about that, but there is an aspect that if I end up in an assisted care facility, I don't have to drive to the campus. I just need to leave my room and go down to the area where everybody hangs out, and you can evangelize right there. And I'm thinking, that's going to be pretty cool. I'll let you know when I get there. But to me, that sounds like, wow, you got a fishing hole right where you live. You don't need to leave your home. You just need to leave your room, and you need to find somebody who maybe can't even get away from you. Now, here's just as an aside, this is something that I think is, it's a bummer, but I think that we need to be prepared for. I used to think people who are in an assisted care facility reaching the end of their lives are going to be more receptive to the gospel than younger people because they're thinking about death. A buddy of mine, dear pastor friend, Highland Goodman, he worked for 10, 12, 15, 20 years in one of those assisted care facilities, the multi-level ones. And I said to him, it must be really easy to share the gospel, naively, I said, because they're thinking about death. And then the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And he said, you know, I used to think that too, but they're so entrenched in their beliefs. They've lived this way for 70, 80, 90 years. To give up on what they believe their whole lives is to say, I was wrong my entire life. And that is a hard pill for people to swallow. So keep that in mind. And let that maybe temper your enthusiasm about witnessing to seniors. What can you do on the phone? I think you can if you want to, sir. I think the internet is always a good place to be doing that. I think you can do it with the staff that's there. Hey, we'll send you copies of What Time Is Purple, too. Don't forget, wretched.org/purple. We'll send them to you so you can witness to the staff. You can witness to the other people who are living around you. If you go out to events, you can witness there also. Can you do it on the internet? Wow, there's plenty of chances, and might I just say this, hopefully not overstepping my bounds here, never too old to witness and share your faith with somebody. So please, whatever stage, whatever level of care that you are at, please just find yourself a pagan and share the good news with that person. Unless, of course, they can roll away from you faster. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for being here today. We always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. I have got the win-win situation for you. If you have someone that you know is enthralled with or persuaded by evolutionary theory, atheist, agnostic, maybe a young student in your life, give them our booklet, What Time Is Purple? A win! And we will give you the booklet for free. Win-win. What happens is, you pay for shipping, we send you the booklet, you give them away. Easy peasy. To get up to 20 copies of What Time Is Purple, go to wretched.org/purple today. Now that's a deal no Christian can refuse. Up to 20 copies, you just pay for shipping, wretched.org/purple. Now, if you are a larger ministry or a church and you'd like to distribute a veritable herd, or is it a bunch of gaggle of copies? We'd love to send them to you. Get a hold of Al at wretched.org and he'll set it up. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl and she repented. She used to be a sad looking kid. Now seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually. And the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Does this sound familiar? It's Saturday night, and there you are on your computer, and you decide to watch a video of John MacArthur. And the next thing that you know, you're 3 hours deep in YouTube watching a baby giraffe trying to stand up. Hey, it's happened to all of us. Instead of watching random videos and losing all sense of time, we suggest visiting wretched.org. There are hundreds of hours of biblically-based TV and radio, and a library full of hand-picked content specifically for you. over 2,400 30-minute TV programs with subjects ranging from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics. Wretched's hour-long radio programs posted every day tackle tough issues that we all face today. That's not all. Every Monday, you can expect to hear Grace to You's Phil Johnson on Too Wretched for Radio with Todd. So the next time you're just wandering the web watching baby giraffe videos, head on over to wretched.org. Wretched.org.
Know your reformers. Ulrich Zwingli was a Swiss reformer who pioneered expository preaching, introduced the regulative principle, and brought a republican government to Switzerland. He fought against the Roman Catholic Church for theological and political independence and died in battle. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Okay, so you think you're too old to contribute anything to the kingdom, huh? This is Wretched Radio. If you just heard the beep talk called into 1-877-282-BEEP, it was a fellow, sounded older to me. I don't know how old, but he was asking the question, if you're in a nursing home, assisted care, how can you witness to people? Now, I don't know if he's there or not or preparing to go there, but what was your response to hearing an elderly man ask how he can still evangelize? That do anything for you? Was it just, yeah, okay, whatever? Or did you go, cool, an elderly saint who still wants to be active, sharing his faith? I don't know about you, but I was encouraged by that man. And you can do that if you're in an assisted care facility. Let's just say you can't witness to anybody. For whatever reason, maybe they've clamped down on you. Hey, you keep witnessing, we're going to kick you out. You have no place to go. I get that. What else might you be able to do? Could you do anything? Does anybody come to your assisted care facility to do chapel, to do church on Sunday? I know this from experience. Our church, we visit a nursing home. And what is the correct term for it these days? I'm not trying to, I don't want to be offensive unnecessarily. What is the correct term for it? I think it's assisted care facility is the modernized term of what we used to call a nursing home, regardless. We go every Sunday, mostly every Sunday, and people gather, not a ton, 8, 10, 12, maybe 15 people, typically wheelchairs or with walkers. They come in, and some hymns are sung, and a sermon is preached. And we invite the congregation to go along, even if they're not participating in the service, so that they can just sit there and mix and mingle with the elderly saints who come. And the thinking behind it is, we're going to minister to them, right? That's what, the way it feels. Okay, you're taking time out of your day to go do something for somebody else. So we, the whippersnappers, are going to really comfort and to fellowship with these older people, like we're doing them some sort of service. And here's the reality. There is not a person that I have met from our church who has not gone to this, maybe dragging their feet a bit, who when it was done didn't go, man, that was amazing. That was so encouraging. We go and we see elderly people. They get wheeled into a church service. They sing, most of them not real great. Believe me, I know, because I know what bad singing is because I'm the king of it. And nevertheless, sometimes with their chins on their chest, singing these hymns, listening to the sermon, sometimes they fall asleep. And nevertheless, you get encouraged because it's like they come here, they're tired, they have a hard time listening for that amount of time, whatever it happens to be, and yet they come anyway. Look at God carrying this person to the end of their life, 89 years old. God's taken them all the way. They've been a believer for almost 8 decades. God has been faithful to them. God is keeping them active and desiring to be with the Word and God's people. Look at God working in these people. So if you're in an assisted care facility and there's nothing you think you can do, you can encourage us. Go to those services, and I'm telling you, you bless us. You bless us. Don't quit. And even if you can't get to the service because now you are bed-bound, you fall asleep regularly right in the middle of a sentence. Yep, you sure do. But you keep praying, and then you fall asleep again, and you keep praying, and you fall asleep. Those sweet prayers have got to be so pleasing to God, so dear to Him. Keep praying, saint. There's something that all of us can do to the end of our days. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. The news that the governor of Virginia, writes Josh, threatening military force against its citizens regarding the freedom to bear arms if the counties don't enforce the new coming weapons ban. Very unsettling. I agree with that. How do we know when to defy the authority? These laws are designed to limit the citizens' abilities to defend their families against a tyrannical government, invading nations, or the local bad guys who like to storm homes. How do I honor God and physically protect my family? That's a great question. And it's not easy on either side. And I think there's going to be different Christians that come to different conclusions on this particular issue. So let me try to give as balanced a response as possible, and then you make this decision for your home. Question number one, to whom are you responsible first? Who is your first authority? Well, there's realms of authority. There's God's realm of authority, which is over all things, all institutions, every molecule. But He shares some of that authority with different realms. Mom and dad, the family realm, schools, I believe, teachers, church realm, government realm. So who do we obey? Well, we see Peter and we see John saying, government, I'm sorry, I can't obey you because you're forcing me to sin. God commands me to preach the gospel. You're commanding me to not. Sorry, you lose, He wins. That just solidifies God's authority is even over government authority. So when the government authority tells me to do something that God commands me to do, it is a sin. Now, what about guns? Because you might think, is there a Bible verse where God commands us to have guns? No. No, there's not. Is there any verse that God indicates that I have a responsibility to protect my family? And I believe the answer to that is absolutely. Not only do we see it, I think, for instance, that I am supposed to, as the man of the home, my role is to be to love, cherish, to protect, to be the one who goes to war, to be the one who lays down life for loved ones, because that's my job assignment. Now, the question is, how do I carry that out? I don't have a verse that says you have to carry a firearm to do that. But I would say if a Christian man determines in order for me to fulfill my responsibility to protect my family that God has given to me under my authority, there's going to be some men who decide I need a gun in order to do that. Should you do that? I can understand how a man would say, yeah, I'm going to keep my gun. I can also understand how a Christian would go, no, I can't do it because the government is telling me and that would be a sin and I'm just going to have to figure out other ways to defend my family. And if it means that my government comes crashing down my door and takes my life and my family's life, God is sovereign and I'm going to submit to that. I can see both of those sides. I really can. I have an inkling which way that I tend to tip, but nevertheless, I think you should probably be thinking it through because this is probably an issue that's going to be coming our way. I don't suspect that it's going to happen anytime soon. We're a gun-toting nation. There's a lot of guns out there, and it would take a lot. And there are a lot of people, good, bad, or otherwise theology, that are going to cling to their guns. And I think it's going to be pretty difficult for the government to take them all away. Nevertheless, the Christian has a conscience issue. If the government is saying, get rid of your guns, and I've got one, am I sinning by keeping it? I think some Christians are going to say I am. I think other Christians are going to say, no, I am not because of my responsibility. You decide. And when you run into another Christian who has made a different decision, please, let's not start a new denomination, the gun-toting denomination, the anti-weapons denomination. We can still have fellowship over the gun issue. Gentlemen, you both pack heat. Anything I said about that was deficient, wrong, or misleading?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, I'd rather be off on that. Well, you probably should, Joey.
No, I prefer blades. I like that, you know, up close and personal self-defense.
I see. That's just lovely. Tony, did I say anything that was deficient in that little diatribe?
Yeah, I don't carry, but other than that, I'm good.
You don't?
I don't.
Wow.
I'm an NRA member, and I don't carry.
I guess I'm more evangelical than I thought. Because don't forget, that is what it means to become an evangelical. This is the order. You repent, put your trust in Jesus Christ.
And?
You get a gun permit, and then you vote Republican. That's just how it works. And you watch Fox News. So though in that order, you might want to get baptized in there someplace. But so somewhere in there, that's kind of the order of affairs.
Am I sinning if I haven't licensed my fists?
Well, if the government tells you you can't make a fist, which frankly it might some days. Our church writes, I'm sorry. Wow, this is a fascinating name. H-I-L-E-I-G-H. Hilly? Do you think that's how you pronounce that? Our church has decided to include young people in the services. They're serving as ushers, choir members, filming, etc. Of course, they're being supervised and mentored by leaders. However, they're also serving communion. Honestly, I haven't observed that at any other church. Is this biblical? Anything that somebody does that usurps an elder role should be really scrutinized. Is it the elder's role to be an usher? Yeah, no. I mean, it says something, but does it have to be an elder? I think it says something, but I don't think you have a verse that would support that. Opening up the door. Can a non-elder do that? I think the answer is yes. Choir members, I think the answer is yes. Filming, I think the answer is yes. Serving communion, is that something that is an elder role? I don't think that you're going to find a Bible verse that says it is, but there's something about it. I know that sounds nebulous. That says that really is something that should be done. Leading something, an ordinance of the church should be done by an elder. The other things are not ordinances. That is, so I would lean toward probably not the role for the kids. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.